This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It has been a week. Wow. Demos, rush jobs, interesting occurrences for the close of the month. We had some stuff that was supposed to run and all be happy today because closed the month of November last night, and we had added a whole bunch of stuff to that schedule, and you know, we had tested them onesie twosies, and everything was fine, but you know, 2 minutes here, 3 minutes there, 10 minutes there, all of a sudden it starts to add up. So we had basically pushed a little server up against the wall and made it run like crazy. So we're going to be doing a bit of optimizing to get some of that stuff taken care of, but that's okay. I think I'm on day two of my no complaints for 21 days, no grace. I actually took the opportunity to discuss an item with a friend on Tuesday night, and I knew at the time I was doing it that I was going to have to switch my bracelet, but that's okay. It's something that needed to be discussed, and there was pretty much no way to discuss it without getting involved in some other items, and so I just took the hit, and there you go. So, it's day two. We had a wonderful Thanksgiving, really a wonderful Thanksgiving. My parents celebrated, as I mentioned last week when I was driving home, my parents celebrated their 60th wedding anniversary. Had a great time. They didn't know I had set up for my brother to do a video Skype with them. They were just thrilled with that because he lives in California, so they don't get much of a chance to talk to him, so at least face-to-face with video. So they thought that was very cool. And then, as I had mentioned last week, my brother-in-law, my wife's brother, there we go, had that one turned around. My wife's brother is heading to Iraq, I believe, in 2 days. And so had a chance to see him play some video games with his sons, and you know, we had a very, very nice time. And I'm debating whether to talk about a scene that I was privileged to witness. That is a scene that I do not want to intrude on, and yet it is a scene which I know has been played out thousands and thousands of times, and it was very touching. Since it's been played out thousands and thousands of times, you know, maybe it would be okay. I don't think they'd mind. In generic terms, I was honored to witness a father talking to his son before his son went off to war. And I have to tell you that it was very close, and it was very personal, and it was very intimate. And while I could not understand what was being said, I knew exactly the feelings that were being conveyed. And I understood that this was a father who was expressing his pride and his adoration and his concern for his son. And it was a son who was reciprocating, because you could see on both of their faces that they were not taking for granted that the events over the next year would be comfortable or or expected. And just aside from the emotional content of those moments, as I reflected on that later, and I thought about the heartbeat of that moment, I thought about God and Jesus Christ, and I thought about the conversation that might have gone on before Jesus left heaven and came to earth. And I think in some aspects it was probably very similar. That there was a deep intimacy, that there was time taken to express appreciation, to express concerns, to share, and to not take for granted that what was coming would be comfortable or convenient. And it honestly was a wonderful thing to see. And as I said, I don't think that they would be bothered at all by me sharing that with you in generic terms. So it was a wonderful Thanksgiving. On the topic of topics, I've got a lot of things stirring in the pot at this point. And I was really sort of trying to decide on which of them I wanted to chase down. You know, it's actually a little cool here now, so I'm turning on the heat. I was trying to decide which of them I actually wanted to chase down today. And one came up that I don't feel like I'm quite finished with yet, but there's an aspect of it that struck me recently, and so I thought, well, we'll start out with this topic, go tangentially, and then maybe when I get the topic done, we'll come back and visit that. And specifically, I've been pondering the last, month or so, the way of a man with a maiden. Not the way of a maiden with the maiden. The way of a man with the maiden. Because Proverbs 18 and 19, Proverbs chapter 3, 18 and 19 said, there are three things that are too amazing for me, four that I do not understand. The way of an eagle in the sky, the way of a snake on a rock, the way of a ship on the high seas, and the way of a man with a maiden. And I've just kind of been pondering that if we really could strip away all of the foolishness that the world, the flesh, and the devil has instilled in this relationship of a man with a maiden, what would that be like? You know, if we could really just get back down to what God intended, what would that be like? I mean, we understand out of the story of Genesis and the Garden of Eden that after man had surveyed all the animals and giving them names, that God looked at man and said, you know, it's not good that he's alone. I will make him a helpmeet. I will make him a partner. And so he performed a little operation, took a rib out of man, and he made woman. And there have already been people who have observed that God did not take a piece out of man's skull for woman to lord it over him, and he did not take a piece out of man's foot for woman to be his servant. He took a piece out of his side to symbolize that they would stand side by side and be partners. So that gives me a pretty good indication of where things should be, but I've actually pondered if there was ever a time when things in relationships between men and women were closer to what they should be than what they are now in America. and within the cultural context that is America. I've thought about going backwards in time and wondering what it was like before the internet, before television, before movies and radio and even photography. Before all these things that have a tendency to emphasize only the surface, what was it like in the early days? Out on the frontier! You know, and there's been a lot of things written about the frontier, and as I said, I'm not done with this yet because I'm still doing some research. I was actually on Google last night, and I was looking around for a book on frontier women, and it was pretty interesting. It came up on one of the Google book searches, and I was just scanning through it, and the author there was talking about the stereotypes that we have of the frontier woman, and how she just really wanted to get back east to where she could get back to her friends and her cute dresses and all that sort of thing. And the author was saying that some research seems to indicate that, in fact, the frontier women were a lot more hardy and sturdy than a lot of the stereotypes make them out to be. That they, in fact, had their purpose, that they went out and worked in the fields and they got things done and they were industrious. Because in our society, one of the things that is pushed and pushed and pushed on women, pretty much anywhere you look, one of the things that are pushed is that one of the core components of a woman's existence should be her attractiveness. I was watching excerpts from a concert. My wife had it on. I was downstairs doing some writing on the children's novel, which is going fine, by the way. I was trying to rush and have it done by Christmas, and it's okay right now, but, you know, it just needs more time. So I've kind of abandoned that, and I'm just going to go ahead and take the time to get it done. But as I was wandering up through the living room, my wife had a concert on, and it was from, I don't know, Vienna somewhere, one of the old stately cities, and it was in this opera house. Gorgeous, gorgeous opera house. There were, I think I counted, 4 balconies. I mean, it was just a gorgeous thing. And they were doing a concert of wedding music, and I think, if I got the story correctly, they had invited a married couple who had just recently been married to come in and sit on the front row so that the conductor would have someone to talk to about the music and that sort of thing. And it was a beautiful, beautiful concert. And all the men are in tuxes, of course, and all the women on stage are in these beautiful antebellum-type gowns with the plunging necklines and the big poofy skirts and the whole bit. And, of course, they're just all dolled up to the nines, and they're all beautiful women, and they had the singers up on stage who had beautiful, trained voices. I mean, obviously a lot of artistry, a lot of discipline, a lot of pursuit of their craft, obviously, not to take anything away from them. But as I was listening to these women, and as I was enjoying the qualities of their voices, it just struck me that there was a certain sadness about this. Because I have no doubt that there are many women who exist in the world who might have voices that are the equivalent, with the proper training, or the superior to these voices that I was enjoying, but there wasn't probably going to be much chance that I was ever going to hear them. Because those women would not compare on an attractiveness scale to the women who were on the stage, and the attractiveness scale would win out. In other words, what does it cost us in the enjoyment of the arts to have such a heavy emphasis in our society on attractiveness? Does it not cost us the opportunity to enjoy unique talents? People like Susan Boyle, who, if you don't recognize that name, you probably know her, you may not just know her name. She's the woman who went on one of the Britain's Got Talent shows and walks out just in her little dress with her frizzy hair and galumping along. I mean, no one has necessarily trained her. She's just a sturdy woman and gets out there and starts singing I Dreamed a Dream and just a beautiful voice. And a wonderful performance. And yet we are robbed in society of those types of performances many times because the package doesn't line up to certain standards which exist for no other reason than to sell things. Because if we're honest, the reason the images are on television is to keep our eyeballs glued to it so that when the sponsors come on, we will listen to what they have to say. And much of what is selected on television is only selected because it will attract more eyeballs. I got really tickled on Sunday as I was listening to a radio program from AARP. And they were talking about the baby boomer generation and how that the baby boomers are still an economic force in this country. And the host of the program was saying he didn't understand why more people didn't market to baby boomers. He said the only time you see people marketing to baby boomers are for Medicaid drug plans or for drugs or for incontinent products and that sort of thing, and you don't really see all of the other things that baby boomers spend money on. All you see is ads with young people on them. And I chuckled to myself and said, well, of course, because the job of advertising is to keep eyeballs glued to the screen. And the way we keep eyeballs glued to the screen is by parading a whole series of attractive women across the screen who the advertisers would like to convince us are young and available. And if we will just use their products, we would have more of a chance of having one of those. And so we get this whole structure built over our society that one of the major ways that we are going to assign value to women's lives is by how attractive they are. Personally, when I go into the workplace, I'm not really that concerned about how, quote unquote, attractive women are. I just want them to be able to do whatever job they are undertaking. And if they do their job with distinction, and if they do their job with diligence, it really doesn't matter to me whether they're wearing cute shoes and a matching handbag. But unfortunately, we have this thing in our society that has been brought on in large part due to media and the need for media to create an appealing picture so that we will be attracted to that picture, so that we will stick around to see the advertisements, that we've created this idea that it's really important to be attractive. I mean, I have heard stories about women who are married and have never allowed their husbands to see them without makeup. Women who get up before any lights are turned on so that they can scurry into the bathroom and put their makeup on so that the first time their husband sees them, he will see them with makeup. He will see her with makeup. And waits till late at night, till the lights are off, to take off all the makeup and then sneak in bed. I find this sad. And frankly, I am quite proud. I am quite proud to have a daughter who thinks nothing of throwing her hair up in a ponytail, of throwing on a t-shirt and some old jeans, and walking out of the house without any makeup on when she has something she needs to accomplish. When my daughter was the interim children's minister at a local church here, there were days when she needed to paint sets and when she needed to get things ready for church on the Sunday, and sometimes I would come in on the Saturday and I'd help them paint and that sort of thing, and Lizzie would be there just quite comfortable with herself. And there was one time, I can't remember whether I've talked about this story on the podcast or not, there was one time that someone else was there, and we got to talking about clothing and how men pick out clothing, and I just said, you know, frankly, I have a zero neuron commitment to what I'm going to wear to church on Sunday. Unless my wife puts out clothes, I wear cranberry shirt, tan pants every Sunday. That's it. It's a zero neuron commitment. And I said, you know, frankly, if someone has a problem with that, they can come and talk to me. And the response that I got from this person was, well, do you really think they're going to come to talk to you about it? And I thought about that later, and I thought to myself, so they aren't going to come to talk to me about what I'm wearing, but I should be concerned about it. So in other words, I'm supposed to read people's minds and figure out whether or not they like my outfit and change my behavior based on that. Or since I know I can't read their minds, what I really have to do is think about what they might be thinking about and choose what I'm going to wear based on that. You know, that is too much effort for me. I'm sorry, but I am not going to do that. It is a waste of mental energy. My philosophy is that joy is the greatest adornment of a person's life, and I will work to put on joy rather than work to try to apply some kind of whitewash to the outside. I have to get my mail. One moment. This does work out, though, in some great sadness. And I'm sure if you have watched any news at all at this point, you have already heard about Tiger Woods and his transgressions. And I certainly have spent plenty of time talking about men and the misconceptions that they have. And in fact, this week, as a buddy of mine, we were talking about this. He said, yeah, he said, when are you going to talk to the women? Oh, he said, because I think there's some things. I said, no, honestly, there are. There are some things to discuss over what the flesh does to women that is a flip side to what the flesh does to men in convincing men that women are just tools. But we don't really have time to go into that. I'm back into my garage. One moment. So I really didn't think I was going to talk any more about the whole men equation, but there was one thought that I had in terms of this whole attractiveness situation and in terms of that situation specifically, and that was that it caused me to wonder. It caused me to wonder about what what happens in the life of a woman to bring her to the place that she is willing to be a mistress. And I think a great deal of that comes down to the need to be an attractive force. Whether that attractive force brings money, whether that attractive force brings attention, that attractive force becomes more important than stopping for a moment and thinking about the fact that you're not just having an affair with a man, you are breaking up his marriage and damaging his children. And I thought, how sad is it that there are women whose lives are so bound up in the need to be an attractive force that they become destroyers? Many years ago, when my daughter was in high school, she was on the debate team, and she put together a speech on the debate team, and the title of the speech was, "Nothing Beats a Great Pair of Legs." And in the speech, she compared and contrasted a supermodel's legs with the legs of Mother Teresa. In one case, you have legs that are used for nothing more than to propel a human hanger down a runway to make clothes look good, to sell things, to attract eyeballs so that advertisers can hopefully get us to buy whatever is being advertised. And on the other hand, you have legs that were used to carry the sick, to care for the poor, to accomplish something profound in life. And I would be very surprised if Mother Teresa spent much time worrying about the fact that she didn't have cute shoes and a matching handbag. And the point of my daughter's speech was that at the end of the day, she would much prefer to have the legs of Mother Teresa than the legs of a supermodel. Because we should find our value not in the oohs and ahs of what comes from outside us, but we should find our value in the epic and adventure and quest that lays before us. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.